If you paid attention this week, you probably noticed that in the Christian tradition, they've moved into a season of what's entitled Lent that began with Wednesday being Ash Wednesday. And oftentimes, I pay attention to when Ash Wednesday is rolling around because we have so many services in the hospital. And for some reason, the sight of a few folks that I saw on Wednesday with ash crosses on their forehead, just my first reaction, even though I've been seeing that for many years, was have a little something there. I don't know if I'm that far removed from it or but certainly it's one of the most beautiful rituals, even though it's a very strange ritual. It's a beautiful ritual in my mind. If you don't know what happens on an Ash Wednesday service, basically an ash cross is placed on your forehead and the words are spoken to you, "You are dust, and to dust you will return." So that would make it the second most exciting service to be a part of this week for you, right up there with embracing our finitude. What an interesting thing to remind ourselves of every once in a while, that you are dust, you are the ground, and eventually to the ground in some form or another, you will return to that. It's not something that we like to think about very often, and most of our time is spent trying to avoid thinking about it, embracing it, and avoiding it entirely, seeing if we can avoid the signs of aging. I found myself saying about an actor that I hadn't seen in anything for about 15 years that showed up in another movie. I said to my wife, "Wow, they've really aged." And I just wanted to go, "You're an idiot." "Well, of course they have." And then this voice in my head said, "You know, you want to look in a mirror?" Like, and of course, my beautiful image of death and aging is brought to me by Mitch Hedberg, the comedian, that loves it when people says, "You look so much younger in that photograph." And he says, "Of course you do. Even if the photograph was 5 minutes ago, you were younger in that photograph." So I invite you to look up Mitch Hedberg as a comedian if you haven't. This is not a topic that we enjoy talking about, and as Milan Kundera in his book, The Unbearable Lightness of Being, unpacks, and then in another essay, talks about how we avoid this subject, and he uses the image of how we avoid talking about feces. And he uses the word shit, but I don't say that from up here, you know. Wait, I just did. Sometimes it helps that the mic doesn't work. But he talks about how we avoid it and how they even debated at the Council of Nicaea whether or not God had an intestines and if God had fecal matter coming from God's presence. And if it did it stink? A great use of time for a council to spend some time thinking about. But he also focuses on all the things that we do in bathrooms to try to pretend like it doesn't stink. Have you ever been amazed when you walk in a bathroom and someone says, "Wow, I can't believe it. The smell in here is horrible." Yes, it is. Do I need to remind you what happens? I never see my dogs walk into the backyard and go, "Man, what happened back here? Is that you?" They know it. It stinks. It's a part of life. And I don't know, I just would love to hear Kundera's response to the latest innovation of poo-pourri. You know, the spray that creates a shell so that when your poop falls into it, it blocks the smell and the bathroom remains smelling like orchids for the rest of your time. And I know we're laughing and it's absurd, but it is absurd, isn't it, to think that we are surprised that something that we know stinks, and we were surprised that the room where we let that go stinks. But we often avoid and try to avoid the things, even if we know them in the back of our mind, the things that are unpleasant, the things that we don't want to spend time thinking about and don't want to have reminders of about, we do our best to avoid them. Existentialism is a philosophy that really embraces that, concept and gets people to think about the big things that we are afraid of, not for any other reason than it can heighten our sense of awareness of who we are. Søren Kierkegaard is often described as the father of existentialism, and he argued that we can rise above the ordinary contradictions and of life and living only by facing them in our lives and not trying to eliminate them. At one point, Kierkegaard in his life suggested that we had to make up our minds, and we, especially if we're talking about our pending death that is looming out there for us, that we had to make up our minds to either choose aesthetic preferences or aim for pleasure and happiness in some kind of afterlife, or live by the letter of the law out of fear and some kind of moral code. But at some point in his life, he took a leap and he just began to describe spirituality as thinking for ourselves rather than following our senses or the prescriptions of existing rules or regulations. That sounds like he let go of his Lutheran roots and he might have found Unitarian Universalism. He writes, "In the sphere of historical freedom, transition is a state. In order to understand this correctly, we must not forget that the new is brought about by this leap of understanding and awareness." He also goes on to describe the angst that it creates, the anxiety for ourselves if we allow ourselves to think about death. Anxiety, he describes it, is the dizziness of freedom, which emerges when the spirit wants to posit the synthesis and freedom to look down at its own possibilities, laying hold of finiteness to support itself. Freedom surrenders and succumbs in this dizziness. The rush toward happiness for Kierkegaard, that was when we have these exact opposites that are grasping our attempt at freedom. We want happiness, but nothing that we attempt in life really brings us happiness. And he would even point out that in the Latin, that's the only Latin we're going to, I joked with Tim earlier that the whole service was going to be in Latin today. This is the only Latin. But Don's not here, is he? You're not listening, are you? Oh, he's back there. He always gets me if I get it wrong. But basically, happiness is based in chance. Is that right, Don? Yes, he gives me the thumbs up. So think about that. Happiness based in chance. So what is, if we are rolling the dice that we are going to go for something of happiness, Kierkegaard would say it's only an attempt to return to some kind of beautiful, perfect image that we have in our mythology back there. For him, it was a Garden of Eden image. But whatever it is that we believe, that we came from some kind of perfect place or are going to some kind of perfect place, and we are trying to hypnotize ourselves to thinking that that is what we are striving for in happiness. When he actually says, "The fall from paradise was the best thing that ever happened to us. It allowed us to discover the contradictions and the tensions of life, to recognize the differences between good and evil, right and wrong, life and death. It's not happiness we should pursue, but the ability to fully come to life in awareness of our freedom, in awareness of our death, in awareness of our possibilities, in awareness of our finitude. We should welcome the anxiety, because the anxiety wakes us from the comforting illusions of happiness." Kierkegaard ends this section by saying, "Whoever has learned to be anxious in the right way has learned how to ultimately live life." Think about that. We're inviting ourselves to embrace death, and now we're inviting ourselves to embrace anxiety. There's a beautiful story of Rollo May, who is also an existentialist therapist, that says, gives a confessional experience of standing outside his daughter's bedroom, and often before he was getting ready to go to bed, would open the door and watch his daughter sleeping just to make sure all was well. And he opened the door, and she was sleeping so peacefully. And then he said, "All of a sudden, I had an image of her dying, or that she was dead, lying there. And I was overcome by this fear and this anxiety of, oh my, this person that is so dear to me, imagining her death." And as he allowed himself to fully go into that, Rollo May says, I never felt love more deeply for her than in that moment. What an amazing thought, that allowing ourselves to fully experience the anxiety of life, to fully live into the fears of our finitude and all that is out there, instead of somehow trying to numb ourselves from the realities that are a part of life, may open us up to some deeper experience, some deeper emotions. So how do we live responsibly in this experience, this universal experience, in the reality that we're all going to die? We can choose to live frozen with the fear of death, unwilling to search for anything beyond the handful of beliefs that we were given as children, or if we really search, we can find something more. The German poet Rainer Maria Rilke wrote a letter to a friend just a couple of years before Rilke died. And he wrote, "I am not saying that we should love death, but rather that we should love life so generously, without picking or choosing, that we automatically include it in our love." That is what actually happens in the great expansiveness of love, which cannot be stopped or constricted. It is only because we exclude death that death becomes more and more foreign to us, ultimately our enemy. He writes further, "Our effort can be dedicated to this, to assume that the unity of life and death is there, and let it be progressively demonstrated to us. Death is our friend, our closest friend, perhaps the only friend who can never be misled by our ploys or our vacillations. Death is our friend precisely because it brings us into absolute and passionate presence with all that is here, all that is natural, and that is love. Life, as our song said earlier, our hymn, life always says yes or no simultaneously. And death is the true yea-sayer. It stands before eternity and says yes." Now think about that. Not just embracing finitude, but calling death a best friend. That is a difficult subject, and it's easy to talk about when we're standing and thinking about it intellectually. But we know even many of our members are facing that emotionally as a reality in their lives. And it's not as easy a subject to talk about, but it doesn't make it any less powerful in how it opens us up to so much more awareness of life. The American environmentalist Joanna Macy took Rilke's poem and translated it into an understanding of the world, believing that if we embrace the naturalness of death, then it would also awaken us to a deeper appreciation and understanding of our world around us. She says, "In the face of impermanence and death, it takes courage to love the things of this world and believe that praising them is our noblest calling. It's not conditional courage. It's not stoic courage. It's courage born of the unexpected discovery that acceptance of mortality yields an expansion of being. And so we befriend death. We contemplate it and include it in our awareness and allow it to expand our being. It invites us to a deep level of awareness, deeper levels of emotion, invites us to fully live in the present, in the now. It actually invites us, if we allow it, it invites us to be our best selves in the world." Now, I know about you all that we are not a group of fundamentalists here looking for easy black and white answers to life. If you were that kind of person, you would not enjoy the experience of spirituality that we practice here, because we often answer questions with questions and invite you on a journey of your own quest and search for truth and meaning. We are a place here at the UUCC that embraces uncertainty, chaos, and complexity. We don't spray poopery to cover our anxiety. We might do that in the bathrooms, actually. But when we're thinking about the things that are hard to embrace, we don't cover them up. We embrace them. We feel them. And we allow them to awaken our souls to a deeper state of being. And it is in this awakened state of being that we become a better selves, living lives of deep meaning and value, transforming our personal lives, taking care of the earth that has been given to us as our custodial service, and living in deep awareness of who we are and our values and our beliefs and in all that we do, seeking justice in our world. May we celebrate and embrace our friend, death.